Good morning, and welcome to WDRT Show Conversations. My name is Dina Eccles, and my guest today has taken a deep dive where few dare to go. Dr. Sarah Donfrio has studied the negative impacts of large factory farms on rural communities in Wisconsin for the past 9 years. She recently received her PhD in political economy from the Department of Sociology at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. She is now working with communities in Wisconsin and other Midwestern states to understand the rapid proliferation of co-digesters. Specifically, she's tracing the rise of co-digester industry, which includes recycling companies, landfilling companies, industrial agricultural operations, and the natural gas industry. I heard Sarah speak on a leadership call of the Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network, and her passion and depth of knowledge piqued my curiosity and interest. What I realized is that once again, too many of us are not in the know when it comes to what is happening in our backyards, literally. So today, we're taking the deep dive with Sarah into the world of digester and co-digesters. So thanks, Sarah, for taking the time to be here today.
Of course, I'm happy to be here.
So I always like to start with what drives you to do what you do.
I think it's, so let me back up for a second. Mm-hmm. So I wear two hats. I'm a political economist, meaning I study the trends of how markets operate and their context. But I'm also a rural sociologist. So I look into rural communities, ask them what is making their lives harder. And I just see a huge, a form of environmental inequality, I see, in relation to very unregulated factory farms and people's water just getting inundated with pollution. In 2014, which is when it's actually a decade ago, I'm realizing, when I first started getting interested in this, it was around the time of the Flint water crisis.
Right.
And I did some research as a assignment for a class. I was just an undergrad at that point. And I found Kewaunee County. And I looked at the case of all of this pollution, people not having basic access to drinking water. At the same time, this other case was in the headlines, and no one was talking about it.
Mm.
So I was wondering, why, how is this able to happen in a place like the United States? How is it that we don't have clean water for rural communities? And that is honestly one of the biggest drivers that I am still kind of, that's still driving me, is looking at this massive inequality that rural communities face in terms of lack of access to basic resources that are being polluted on in many ways by agriculture.
Wow, that is so important. And that is what made you want to take on this research and do it. Mm-hmm. I'm thrilled to hear this because I think a lot of us, we don't hear about it. You know, you know, it's like, I jumped on that call, I heard you speak, and then it made me feel like I want to understand because it's coming to my back door. It's coming to my water, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So thank you again. So let's look at just the basic words that a lot of people might not understand. Like, what are digesters?
So... excuse me if I'm being crude, but if you think about a stomach, it's kind of like that. You put stuff in, it kind of breaks it down using bacteria and oxygen-free conditions, and then what comes out is very similar to poop.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases it is. They use manure for these machines, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of the easiest way to quote digest the issue.
Yeah, right. It makes sense. And that helps. So that's known as an anaerobic digester?
Yes.
Right? And then, so it stimulates, it creates methane?
Mm-hmm. So the conditions within the machine, there are several different types of these, but they always end up being a tank type of thing, even if it's, there's a covered lagoon system, there's a, the most likely, the most typical type of digester that you guys have in Wisconsin are the huge, sorry, I forgot.
So they, and that, and manure is what's used predominantly for that.
For a lot of them. So I wanted from the get-go to really highlight the big distinction between, well, any digester, any anaerobic digester can become a co-digester because it just depends on the inputs.
Correct.
So these are basically the same machines. But if you want to use a manure-only digester, which is often the case on farms, as opposed to a landfill digester, which is a co-digester, they put trash and other stuff in it, as opposed to a wastewater treatment system, which is probably the most regulated type of digester. These are all the main ways that digesters are used in the country today. But for on farm, that's going to be mostly, well, historically, it's been mostly animal manure used in these machines. But in order to make them work, in order to produce enough outputs to make money to pay for the machine, you need a lot of animals. Basically, historically, it's been at least over 1,000 animals, but I just ran numbers recently on the AgStar database, which is a partnership between the USDA, the EPA, and the Department of Energy. That's AgStar. They're really the only ones besides the Department of Energy that has been tracking where these digesters go and what they look like, what kind of farms have them. About 70% of them have more than 2,000 animals on the farm. So these are massive operations. The most common is you're going to see around like 5,000 animals. And for the most part, they've been targeting dairies. And there's actually a specific reason for that. This is where my political economy hat comes in, because when you look at it, you realize, oh, every single thing is about money. Because these digesters are so expensive that they need to nickel and dime every single thing related to them so that they can afford to keep them going. So dairies, as opposed to hog farms, poultry farms, cows, when they eat, they still produce a lot of fiber in their waste. And that fiber can be sold as a bedding product. So they want all of, they want to make as much methane as possible to sell as a fuel, and as much bedding as possible to sell as another product. And they also sell the waste product that comes out of this machine, which is called digestate.
Right. Okay. And I read a lot about that being primarily phosphorus and nitrogen.
Yeah. Well, again, it depends on what you put in it. Mm-hmm. But for manure only, yeah, it's going to be basic agricultural nutrients. But the machine causes a chemical shift. Things don't go away. The nutrients don't go away in the machine. They just are slightly altered. It's kind of like the law of thermodynamics. Matter cannot be created or destroyed, mm-hmm. only altered. That's exactly what's happening here. So there, you're not reducing the amount of waste. You're just rearranging it
a little bit. Okay, got that. Yeah.
But the issue is that once these changes are made, they allow the nitrogen to become more water soluble. Thus, for many of these agricultural communities that already have a problem with nitrates in their water systems, this is a nightmare, because if digesters are not going to help you manage your nutrients better if you're already sloppy at managing manure. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, definitely.
It's not going to do manure management for you. It may be more useful in places that are not like Wisconsin, that do not have issues with
waterways.
Issues with sandy soils, issues with karst topography.
Right.
So that makes handling these things even more of an issue. And it also concentrates phosphorus. And what I've learned working with a lot of agricultural communities is that many of these farms have been operating on land for a long, long time. And there's a lot of phosphorus buildup already. So adding concentrated phosphorus to the land on top of already high phosphorus levels also encourage more runoff into waterways.
Well, that's already a lot to think about in terms of the dangers that we're allowing to happen.
I really like to mention, because I see this in writing on the wall in terms of our regulatory systems, digesters are not a substitute for regulation.
Right. No, if anything, they need a little bit of regulation coming their way.
A little bit.
Yeah. And I know I read also that because of the pathogens that are involved, that things like salmonella, norovirus, E. coli, there are many other things that can become a problem.
Oh, of course. So I actually think this is really important, because there's a lot of misinformation going around, because digesters are also at wastewater treatment plants.
Mm.
So the idea is that what this on-farm digester is the same as a wastewater treatment plant digester. That is not the case. So there are so many other types of treatments that wastewater digester waste has to go through that on-farm digesters do not have to go through. And one of them is the temperature. So wastewater treatment plants often operate at higher temperatures, and in doing so, they kill more off in terms of pathogens.
Got it.
But on-farm digesters, they operate in the mesophilic range, which can go as low as 85 degrees.
So not enough to kill off the things that we would need them to kill off.
No. So mm-hmm. Exactly. They don't kill everything off. But also, once you don't kill everything off and you take it out of the digester and it sits, those buggers just replicate.
Mm. How long have digesters been around? I mean, I'm just curious if you happen to know.
In the United States, on-farm digesters have existed since the 70s.
Mm,
so these are not new technologies.
Right, right. And it's funny, you know, because something comes along, some new technology, and we think, oh, this is the answer. And then we just walk away.
Us.
Yeah. And we walk away from it as it's creating, you know, more and more problems. Wow.
Well, I think that's actually one of the reasons why these are spreading. They sound so good.
Right. We're going to get more energy, because we need more energy. We always, especially now,
really,
we have to have more energy to power our AI.
Exactly. So they're presented almost as a technology that doesn't have any downsides.
Right.
And if you've studied CAFOs as long as I have, that raises a bit of a red flag.
Did you say CAFOs?
Yeah.
Okay.
So concentrated animal feeding operations,
right,
or factory farms.
Right. You can elaborate on that. I always like to make sure that our listeners are understanding these terms that we use.
Oh, yeah. So CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations. In Wisconsin, you guys have a lot of dairy CAFOs. You have small farms, but they are really, really getting gobbled up by the largest farms in the state, and have been for the past 50 years, especially
say,
though in the past 10 years, it's gotten really, really bad in the last 10 years. And we see a shift of cows from the small farms that are going out of business into these large dairy operations. So overall, the rate of cows in Wisconsin hasn't increased or decreased. They've just shifted into different areas of the state that have CAFOs. So, and these CAFOs are highly unregulated because the Clean Air Act and Clean Water Act do not require that CAFOs follow regulations related to them. The CAFOs that do have a water permit and or are required to get one, the fields outside of the facility are unregulated. So basically, they're using they can be used to grow crops, but also it is a really effective form of cheap waste disposal to just get rid of all the waste you have on fields around you. And if you're not paying attention to how much you're spreading, it can go into waterways, especially if you're spreading on frozen or snow-covered ground. That is a huge no-no that we still see on a regular basis. There has been issues of people illegally spreading on other folks' land, and they don't know that they're spreading on their land. And Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network is doing great work with that. But yeah, these CAFOs have a lot of waste, and they could use a hand dealing with this problem. But instead, what we have is a system where we use lagoons, where they're huge, huge open pits of animal waste. And that's where a lot of the methane emissions that we're seeing driving climate change coming from is these pits. We've actually seen methane emissions increase over the past 10 years, specifically because of the use of manure pits in animal agriculture. So essentially, these digesters are a way to undo that damage that has been done related to making manure pits the main form of storage for these operations. So it makes it sound good, right? We're taking all of the methane that we're creating and we're doing something good with it. But once you look deeper, you realize that there are a lot of holes in their arguments that they're not addressing. Primarily that these machines are very much techno fixes that don't address any of the systemic issues related to industrial animal agriculture.
Right. And this is, yeah, and this is why I really wanted you to be on, because they're not going to fix it unless we demand it be fixed. And when you don't know what you're up against. So to me, education around this, all of this, is so, so important.
I agree.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree.
And that's why we're talking today.
Yes.
Yeah, so today you're listening to WDRT's show Conversations. My name is Dina Eccles, and my guest is Dr. Sarah D'Onofrio. And she is many things, but is helping us understand the role of digesters and co-digesters in our rural lands and the complications that we're facing, and is encouraging us really to pay attention to what's happening. So yeah, thank you for all of that. That, you know, again, every time I hear you speak or I look at a little bit more, I realize, wow, there's so much to this, and it's so important. So,
well, that's why I'm here, just to spread the word.
Yeah, good. So then so we've just kind of done the deep dive into the digester thing, which has been going on since the 70s and which we're still allowing to happen. And maybe it's a little bit of an improvement, but it's got a lot of issues with it. But now let's talk about the co-digester.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Get ready,
what
everybody.
What do you want to know?
Yeah, this is everything you've told me and taught me so far has been eye-opening. Like, we know manure goes into the digester. What is available to go into the co-digester?
Okay, so this is, I wrote my dissertation on manure-only digesters. And during the process, I vaguely knew that there were things called landfill digesters. But I had no idea that they were being put on farms until I was contacted by the people from Citizens Protecting WPACA, because they were getting a proposed co-digester in their township right near the town's water sources. And many of them already had wells that were too contaminated with nitrate to drink from them. So they would go to the town hall and get water from their well. And this co-digester was being constructed right across the street from this well.
What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? And we already understood that there was, like I just mentioned, leakage from the current farm into the aquifers underneath. So we were very concerned about this. And I was even more concerned when I learned the inputs of this. So at the time, they were actually advertising that they were going to put pharmaceutical waste into it.
Oh, that's really great.
But again, like, remember, these machines don't get that hot. So these would be hazardous chemicals. They would be human blood, feces. They would be all of this stuff that is very concerning. And most other industries would need several permits to operate under. That is another really important dimension of the co-digester industry. They're targeting farms because of the lack of regulation, so that they can put things like pharmaceutical waste, food processing waste, slaughterhouse waste, which includes bones, guts, all this stuff from pet food factories, baby food factories, plastics that come from post-consumer recycling. Lots of anecdotes are now coming together, and as a researcher, this is when you start identifying themes. And there has been stories of lagoons that had this digestate in them, and when they drain, you can see plastics on the edges of the lagoon. These machines do not get rid of microplastics. They don't get rid of PFAS. And what we're learning is that packaging has been leaking all of these chemicals into food. So even if you separate it from the packaging, the chemicals are still going through the digester. And the most concerning dimension that I've recently learned is that digesters can increase the amount of PFAS in waste. So you could put waste in, and the amount that you would get out has more PFAS in it, because these materials bioaccumulate. And unless you clean out the digester every single time you use it, which costs money and time, you're going to have these substances accumulate in the waste in the digester. And then they spread this on fields, and they call it a safe and beneficial fertilizer, but it is very much not so. There's a lot of stuff in it. It doesn't behave in ways that typical fertilizer does. And we're just giving it to people and saying that you can use it on your in your landscaping business, on your farm, to grow food, to spread on neighbors' lands. And to me, I see a slow motion car crash, because we found out what happened in Maine. We're finding this all over the country, that biosolids have been used as fertilizer, and we're now finding out that they're toxic. But the industry is moving faster than the state is trying to regulate them.
Right. And that was exactly why I wanted you to be on, because we keep seeing this happen. You nailed it early on in the show. You said It's about money.
And, yes.
You know, it's about money because if my neighbor is having a hard time on the farm and someone comes along and says, hey, you can make some money or you could get some free fertilizer by putting up a co-digester on your property. And there's no regulation to that. And the person who's like, yeah, I'm trying to hold on to the farm and this is a great way to do it. Sounds good to me. It's just compost and topsoil. We all mm-hmm. need that, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, and then people, and then this word PFAS is thrown around, and you know, it's only been a few years, and really that we've heard much about it. I know this morning driving here, I heard a whole show about the PFAS and how they're realizing it's in our bloodstream now, that the plastics mm-hmm. are in our bloodstream, and they're not really sure. It's like, well, you know, scientists are divided about what could possibly go wrong and how long it's going to take. But I'm with you. I don't think we have a whole lot of time to have to sort this out. You know, I think we need to wake up to what we're doing here on this planet.
Part of it is no one really wants to take responsibility for it. It's and it's becoming an issue in that people who are in like co-digester companies, for example, they want to put the blame on the industries that produced PFAS, but they don't want to take any responsibility for their role in spreading PFAS.
Yeah.
So it becomes very complicated in that realm. But also, I just wanted to give you all the sales pitch. And then you can really see how it's so easy to fall into the trap of co-digesters. So the sales pitch, I mentioned before that manure digesters have really only been useful for very large farms. That is not the case for co-digesters. Co-digesters can operate on farms with as few as 200 cows. This is because, as I mentioned, they're bringing in all this trash, this industrial waste. So this basically makes it so that even if your farm is not a CAFO, you're producing as much waste as a CAFO. But they're saying, oh, we can take all of that stuff and sell it so that you make even more money. Mm-hmm. So there's money for the co-digester because you rent land to them and they put the co-digester on it and they're operating it. You don't have to do anything. And you just get all this money. Doesn't that sound great? But lo and behold, the thing they're not telling you is that there's all these risks that come with the gas production. There's all these risks that come with managing the waste. There's all of these risks that come with the digester itself. Especially co-digesters, manure digesters were created in many ways to limit neighbor complaints about the smell of a large CAFO. And manure digesters are actually pretty successful at that, reducing odors. Mm-hmm. That's one of the claims that digesters really have going for them. They say they reduce pathogens. That's kind of suspect. They say they reduce methane, only a very small portion of methane, but they do reduce odors. That's not true with co-digesters. Co-digesters have a consistent record of neighbor complaints to the point where in Ohio, one was just shut down and they had to pay residents because they smelled so bad.
And how did that come about?
Well,
first there was a complaint.
Yeah, well, not a complaint. I think there were hundreds of complaints.
Okay, so that helps.
So when there are hundreds of complaints and the state steps in, that's when it is clear that there's something not good going on. But so, this is consistent mm-hmm. with a lot of co-digesters. It's not just one co-digester.
Right, but this is my point. If for the people listening in who may know that this is coming towards them or around them, because I'm hoping that more people will listen to this show, you know, as a podcast, it'll be available, and it can get out to different communities that maybe have more CAFOs than right here in Viroqua. And people to understand that this coming together and complaining, you know, that it's okay, you can do it, you need to do it.
Yes, absolutely. That is such an important point. These, challenging these has really come down to people power and making your voice known. That's what we did in Lend, and we made it known that it was going to be a serious risk for the community, not only in terms of water, in terms of costs that would be passed on the community by road damage. There was going to be dozens of giant trucks coming in with trash every single day on rural roads that are already really destroyed by manure hauling. So they weren't promising to help with these road construction issues. They could leave if they wanted to and leave you all with the mess. It is something that these rural communities need to be knowledgeable about because they are spreading all over the place.
Right. Yeah, I grew up across the street from an industrial park.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, in western Pennsylvania. And it has influenced me because I can go back to the town, the house I grew up in, and still across the street are these, you know, defunct steel mills and other factories, and the ones that are still going are still polluting in gross ways. And it's
how did that affect you growing up?
Well, for one, I came out here to live in the country, but it was horrible, you know, to have that stench all the time, and you know, knowing that most of the people that are living there and a lot of my family that passed on from cancers, you know, various forms of cancers, and you know, I've warned people here, as I see it, because you know. People think they're told, oh, jobs, or, you know, I'm going to make this money, or whatever the excuses are. But the end result, I mean, now what's happening is they've put up an ethanol plant, cracker plant. And it's there's a nuclear power plant, there's an ethanol plant, and you can't breathe the air. And so it's a sacrifice zone. And I said that to someone the other day, and they said, well, where did that word come from? And I said, it's actually the word being used now for communities. Yeah, people don't know. They're sacrifice zones. So really,
where's that energy going?
Right. Wisconsin is becoming. And by the way, when this ethanol plant is picked to be there, it's there because plastics, which around the world are being shunned and people are trying desperately to create treaties and stop using them. They picked that place so that the plastic in the area, all the other factories working with plastics in the area, would feed into that plant.
Wow.
Yeah, it's intentional. And, you know, and so it's a sacrifice zone. People actually came from Louisiana, where they had these ethanol plants, and literally begged people in Beaver County, Pennsylvania, don't let this happen. And I watched it over a 10-year period be allowed to slip through, you know, because a lot of people just, they bought the storyline, jobs. So that's my passion. You know, my passion is we got to quit destroying the earth. We're not throwaway people. You know, the old term was frontline people, that the people who were within a certain radius of factories were frontline people. Well, I hate to tell you folks, we've all become frontline people. We're all frontline people now because it's in our food. It's in the packaging. And no one, you know, there are people trying desperately, you know, companies, nonprofits, Cornucopia is one I'm thinking of, that are trying to get people to take a look at what's in the foods that we're ingesting. So anyway, I don't mean to take on too much of this, but it's... To me, it's like it's time. We can't just sit back and keep letting it happen.
You're right. We're actually part of a great American experiment of what's going to happen to our bodies. We're not sure, and we haven't been sure for a long time, but these companies have been sure about what these chemicals do to us for a long time. But they've been hiding the research. They've been not being held accountable. And we're essentially seeing their predictions come to pass, and they didn't give us any warning. So that's the hardest part of living in this big system. We are just individuals. We don't have all the knowledge that we need to be careful.
But luckily, there are brave people like you who are tackling it, taking it on, doing the research, and taking, attempting to get the word out.
I'm trying my hardest.
Yeah, and I'm
Can
with you.
I share a story with you?
Sure, please.
Well, I'm like you mentioned earlier, I'm working with folks all over the Midwest, including in Michigan, particularly Kathy Morrison, who lives near the Generate Fremont co-digester. This is a unique, very interesting situation. Because this was a quote community digester. So it's just a standalone digester that's not on a farm. But they had signed with a CAFO to spread the waste that came out of it. And it was owned by a company, a very large company that was a in I guess I don't know if they're in I think they're in the recycling industry. They managed this digester so badly. They were putting lots of stuff in it that they would not admit to. The smells were so bad that they essentially couldn't go outside. They likened it to like the smell of a porta potty. It wasn't just waste, it was like chemicals and waste. And it made you just nauseous. So what she is learning over time is that they tested the waste for only a few types of PFAS because there are hundreds of types of PFAS. And they found quite a bit of it, at least two types of PFAS. And this was in 2020. They didn't tell anyone, and they kept spreading for 4 years.
Jesus.
Now there are lots of cancer cases in her area. And no one knows how they're getting these types of cancer.
Yeah, right. No one knows.
No one's getting answers.
Right.
And part of it is just they want to know. They just want to know what's in the soil. They can't even get tests.
Yeah, well,
It's,
welcome to
yeah.
big business owning us. Amazing. Amazing.
I think another thing that we really need to highlight is one of the biggest successful greenwashing schemes of all time is recycling. They are only able to recycle 9% of plastics even today. The majority of it gets burned or shipped to the global south. So we've sorted our things, put them in the bin. But the reality is, many people who are producers have been putting the recycle label on items that are not recyclable.
So that's one thing people can do, resistance, is stop using plastics.
Yeah,
Really, really
one, we
stop.
really need to shift away from the use of plastics because also, if you reuse single-use plastics, they get more toxic with every reuse. They get more toxic if you heat them up. They release all of the BPA and chemicals that are additives into plastics once they get warm at all. So if you can in any way, try to use less plastic. And what's funny is that my mom is from the pla she worked in the plastics industry her whole life. But like, we got to do what we got to do. I talked to her about this and I asked if they had any of those concerns back then. And she said yes, but they didn't do anything.
No, because people were having to pay their bills.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I get it.
You just look the other way.
Yeah, I get how difficult
it is. What can you do as one person?
Right. Well, one person that I'm talking to today on WDRT's Conversations is Dr. Sarah Donofrio. And I'm thrilled that she's having this conversation with us today on co-digesters, what's being thrown on in our waterways, in our air, on the soil that we're growing food from, that we're eating from, and the really, I mean, it can be really stark. This could be really like overwhelming, and people could just say, I don't care. I don't really care. And when that happens, I often say to people, but we do this not, we do this for the children too. We do it
yes.
for the ones coming after us. You know, we
yes.
have been experimented on. We have been thrown, you know, away in a sense. But we can fight. We can stand up and fight.
And doing what you're doing right now is fighting.
Yeah, oh, 100%
is fighting.
Count on it. And I will continue to. Because when I see ignorance, you know, and I don't blame people. I understand. I grew up around people who really believed they were doing the right thing, the best thing for their families. You know, they had jobs. It was mm-hmm. great. Good money. And then the steel mills walked away. You know, and I don't know. I think that we have a lot more strength than we realize. If we just take a moment to understand the complications here. So the last thing we were talking about was the plastics, and for people just to even just do that, to end
yeah.
the use of plastic, because monetarily, if we take that away from them, you know, if we take that away, then maybe they'll have to shut these things down.
Exactly.
You know, and it's also interesting to me because we talked about co-digesters being smaller and easy to place in many different places. And this is now also, not to digress too far, but also just to point it out to people, when they're talking about micronuclear plants, it's the same thing. They're going to have,
yeah.
it's not going to be one big nuclear power plant. It's going to be many, many small nuclear power plants.
So this is actually something I want to address. This is another bit of misinformation that's going around in relation to digesters. Co-digesters are not smaller. They're the same exact size as manure-only digesters on the large, large farms.
Okay.
So it's you're putting different waste streams in it, but it's ultimately the same amount of waste that would come from a CAFO.
Wow.
So they're massive digesters. So your 200 cow farm would be next to a massive, essentially, energy plant.
Wow. Yeah, right. Because we refuse to reduce our consumption. We have to have, you know, we can't seem to do that. So for that, we have to keep supplementing with these ridiculous technologies.
Oh, here's a really cool thing that I learned. digesters have existed in Europe for a while. They're much different than the ones that operate in the U.S. because the U.S. has less regulations for them. But what I wanted to highlight is that the EPA has been creating a waste pyramid, saying what you should do with waste and what you should avoid doing. They switched it so that anaerobic digestion is one step above landfilling.
Wow.
We should not be going from the landfill to the digester. There are so many ways to get rid of food waste that do not include putting it into a digester, such as giving it to animals for animal feed. Baby food companies have been doing that in Michigan, but then they stopped because they were getting more money to put it in a digester.
Oh, jeez.
So essentially, reduce, reuse, recycle. We're skipping the first step and just trying to do the last step. But ultimately, what we need to be doing is consuming less stuff. But that's also for the producers. They throw away so much stuff before it even gets to the consumer. And that's part of the messaging that needs to be pushed. Is this a consumer side problem if this isn't even getting to the consumer? No, our production practices are incredibly wasteful. And instead of doing anything about it, they're just putting it into a digester.
Right. Always these quick fixes. We just keep leaning on these quick fixes.
Yeah. I mean, if you put everything in a machine and call it a day, you have to do much less work than actually fixing the things that cause waste in your business model.
Right.
So it's basically we're kicking the can down the road once again.
Yeah. And it's been going on for a long time. I mean, you know, when you look at plastics having just really come about from World War II, you know, this, all of this damage, all of this, I mean, I hope people are hearing us when we're saying that PFAS, that the plastics are now being found in our bloodstreams. You know, that
our breast milk.
Yeah, it's just, and they don't break down. Our body has to just deal with this in some way. And is this really what we want to pass on to our children? Are we really willing to pretend like nothing is wrong in here, everybody's fine, look at us, we're making money, we're doing our thing? It's America, by the way. You can do this, right? I remember you know, I've been told you can't keep a man from making a dollar, you know? It's like, okay, but at what cost? At what cost? And when do we become we? When do we understand that it's not just me and my little acreage and my little, you know, it's our town, it's our state, it's our country, it's our world.
That was a winning message in Lent. Hey, you wanting to make a living shouldn't mean messing up the town.
Right.
You are part of a bigger thing. Respect that what happens to you may happen to other people once you bring it into the community.
Right. So the landowners need to be asking these companies to be good neighbors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, not asking. They need to be holding them accountable.
Right. Well, we need to, and this is where we get into the possible ordinances that could be starting to be worked on in different communities.
Yes. So I've taken a look at some of these ordinances, and I think one of the most important elements of them is that they're asking these businesses to internalize some of the costs that they externalize onto the communities. And that's basic being a good neighbor.
What a novel idea.
It's encoding the notion of being a good neighbor and respecting your neighbor and their resources into the code of the law. And it's asking, hey, folks, if you want to protect our community, you should help monitor it. If the state is not able to monitor these operations, we need to step in and do it as well. We have a county conservationist. Let's work with the existing structures that are in place to potentially make some change. And it is really encouraging to see these types of really democratic
truly
pieces
democratic
of
yes
legislation, right. Really, because they are, well, they're not pieces of legislation, pieces of the law,
right?
I guess.
Yeah.
So it is really, really, really empowering in my perspective to see folks taking this on.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad to be a part of it.
Right. And that's where I want to really shout out to the Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network. That's where I heard you speak it was a leadership call from that network. And they were talking about this topic. And that's when I realized, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, this is way over most people's heads. And here, the people in the Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network were really taking it on community by community around the state of Wisconsin and acknowledging, you know, where we collectively have, you know, kind of lost our way. and trying to figure it out step by step. What can we do? And so I was really, I'm very impressed with their work, and I look forward to staying in touch and being able to share more about what they're doing for everybody. Because, you know, and that's why radio is so powerful, because a lot of people in rural, you know, we don't have time to sit around and watch TV. We're out in the farms, whatever. But the radios are playing, and you're hearing things. And I think it's really important to, you know, get the word out so that people understand what's really coming. And one of the things I heard on that call was that West Coast operators are looking to move to Wisconsin.
Oh, yes.
CAFO operators, that we could look forward to even more of this if we don't pay attention?
I'm sure that you guys have experienced less snow.
Yeah.
Not maybe recently.
Yeah, but, recently.
But yeah, just like the entire country is warming, it is really, really heating up in the West Coast, where there are the biggest dairies in the country. Heat actually makes dairy production less profitable because the cows produce less milk. And the hotter it gets,
wow,
and the more regulations that they're going to have to follow in California, the more they're shifting to places like New Mexico and Texas. But guess who else is getting hotter and also lacks water resources? These places. So over the next 20 years, we're going to see lots of dairy CAFOs move into the upper Midwest specifically, because you guys have a lot of water. You guys have land that is cheaper than on the West Coast. You all have lots of access to interstate natural gas pipelines.
Thank you. Thanks for that reminder.
And those are actually being expanded.
Yeah.
In places like California, the state is paying utilities to retire natural gas pipelines. And in Wisconsin, you guys are building them up.
Well, let's just say that there are a lot of us who are trying to end that as well.
Oh.
And a real shout out to the.
I would love to be a part of that as
well.
Oh, well,
a real shout out to tribal nations here in Wisconsin.
Oh my gosh!
That are
yes.
really have been on the forefront of stopping these pipelines, and very important, because again, it comes back to a lot of that. Those pipelines aren't even bringing the natural gas into the United States. Even it's just bypassing us and going back into Canada. I mean, it's just there's some just crazy things. And yet we pay the price with when there's runoff or broken pipes in our waterways.
Oh, my gosh. Mm. It is the leakage from these pipelines alone is massive.
Right.
When you have to inject the fuel into it, lots of pure raw methane escapes into the air.
Mm. Right.
So there's lots of issues, particularly because they're also finding out that the waste product from these machines creates nitrous oxide, which is 300 times more powerful than CO2 and way more powerful than even methane.
Okay, now so, before we totally freak everybody out on all those numbers, I think there's one thing we always have to remember, and that however dire these numbers become, that we still have something much more powerful when we utilize it. And that's the power of us. You know, that's us helping one another understand what we've allowed to happen and reversing course.
Yeah.
And we don't have 50 years to reverse course of 50 years. We don't. We don't have that luxury. We have to really begin now. And we have to be collectively applying pressure. Financial pressure, stop buying these things, stop supporting, you know, these companies that are just taking from us. Support our neighbors, help them to understand, you know, what's at stake here. And find ways to do it. Stop using plastics, but also, you know, find community organizations like Sustain Rural Wisconsin Network, that are, you know, it's a statewide, I'm going to let you all know now, you can find it at sustainruralwisconsinnetwork.org. And it's a coalition of individuals and organizations dedicated to preserving the environment while maintaining the health and economy and the economic vitality of rural communities. That's in their website. So they have a map, I think, of concentrated animal feed operations in Wisconsin, and they have toolkits that people can look at on that website to learn more. And they also have a link if you suspect some kind of runoff or manure spill. But very dedicated people, just amazing people. If you want inspiration, go to that website. And that's where I met you, Sarah, and I'm really glad.
I'm so glad you are bringing up that message, because there you can so easily doom scroll. You can so easily get trapped in looking at the downsides, but organizing, talking to people, getting on the same page with people in your community is something that's just part of life that we have really been missing out on, I believe.
I think so too. We've missed,
especially
we're missing
since
that.
The pandemic. Yeah. I think that a lot of people really became less social. It affected a lot of our mental health. And I think a lot of us are still recovering from it, frankly. So,
and this is a great way to recover.
Exactly.
Come
exactly.
together. So when you're sitting around at Christmas time and everybody's all together, just talk about plastic. All right. Well, any last things that you'd like to say? Because we're
no, I
wrapping
think that is a
now.
Perfect note to end on.
Yeah, it's coming. So let's come together, folks. We can do this. So, Dr. Sarah D'Onofrio, it's been a real pleasure. I can't wait to get this podcast out and available to people. And
thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Well, have yourself, everybody, have a really great day, and thank you again.
Thank you. Bye.